Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Forgotten History podcast series hosted by myself, Josh Armstrong. Today, for your daily dose of forgotten history, I'm not going to talk about a forgotten historical event or place, but rather a person who, in being so concerned about his legacy, has had it largely turned into dust. This man was a bastard and an orphan, and became a hero and a scholar, in the words of an outstanding play that was about him. He was born destitute in the Caribbean and died a founding father of the United States of America. But this man has accomplished so much in his life, and because there is so much to talk about, today will be part one of two for this podcast. That's right, today I will talk about Alexander Hamilton. The life of Hamilton begins in Charlestown Nevis in the British Leeward Islands in the Caribbean on January 11, 1755, or 1757. The reason for the unknown year of birth will be discussed later. On this tiny, poverty-stricken island, Hamilton was born a bastard, as his parents were not legally married. His father abandoned him, and his mother, after learning that she was going to be divorced by another man, complicating her relationship status legally. Back then, it would be up to the father of the household to bring in income for the family, but because there was no father, Hamilton's mother had to work. They were still poor, even by the island standards. His economic position wasn't aided by his education. In fact, he was barred from a church school run by the Church of England due to the illegitimacy of his birth. To many, this would have ended their prospects of an education, as it was free, and instead of going to school, they would have had to work. But it did not stop our Hamilton. Aided by a rather large collection of family books in his family library and the drive to learn, he taught himself how to read and write, which would soon come into very critical use. This is because, in 1768, when Hamilton was just about 12 years old, his mother contracted yellow fever and died quickly. As of then, Hamilton was just an orphan who had no money or parents, abandoned in the Caribbean. He had to fend for himself now. At 14, he started working for a shipping company called Beekman & Kruger to support himself, where he quickly became a trusted clerk who organized and inspected cargo crossing the Atlantic. Cargo then in the Caribbean would often include slaves being imported from Africa. As per his job, he would need to inspect them and find the grave conditions that they were in. At this young of an age, it was likely a large reason why, upon arrival in the 13 colonies, he was strongly against slavery. On a side note, for his confusion on his birth year, it is possible that he changed his birth year to be earlier as to be more employable. Conversely, he may have pushed it back as to appear not as old as his fellow students at King's College. Personally, I believe that he was born in 1757 and changed his year of birth to be 2 years earlier to gain employment to survive, which is a stronger reason to edit something like that rather than fitting in if he was born in 1755. Anyways, a while after his mother died, he moved in with his cousin, who would let him live there as long as they could afford it. Yet again, for Hamilton, tragedy struck, and the cousin he moved in with committed suicide after an affair, which caused Hamilton to have to survive on his own again. On top of that, in August of 1772, a devastating hurricane hit Charlestown and the surrounding area. For a battered Hamilton, he tried to reach out to his father for help in the form of a letter. This letter did not catch the attention of his father, but rather a journalist who published his letter in the local newspaper. This letter of his was so great and well-received by his community that local leaders started a fund to send Hamilton to America to get an education. So, in October of 1772, after during a father abandoning him, being prevented from getting an education, the death of his mother, the suicide of his cousin, and a hurricane, the next chapter in Hamilton's life began in New York City. In my opinion, Hamilton's early life is nothing short of a miracle, and he is lucky to have made it to America given all that happened to him. Hamilton attended King's College starting in 1773, where he lodged with Hercules Mulligan, a friend he would have for years to come throughout the American Revolution. In addition, he met other friends like John Lawrence, Marquis de Lafayette, and Aaron Burr. Mulligan was a spy for the Americans who worked as a clothing apprentice for British officials. Lawrence was a strong writer like Hamilton, and he also had strong anti-slavery values. Lafayette was a French military officer who was sent by France to assist the Americans against the British, and Burr was a law student who helped mentor Hamilton in this new land. As their studies were put on hold as the Revolutionary War heated up, Hamilton, Lawrence, Mulligan, Lafayette, and Burr joined the fight against the British. While Hamilton had not grown up around the oppressive British, it's likely that his age, spirit of resisting, and being around his four revolutionary friends made him believe in a revolution. Hamilton's first action against the British was when he and Mulligan, as well as around 100 other revolutionaries, stole 21 out of 24 British cannons in a battery firing on the Continental Army. This heroic action led to the creation of the New York Provincial Company of Artillery, which Hamilton was a captain in. His company would then see action in the campaign of 1776 near New York City, especially in the battles of Trenton and White Plains. At the Battle of Trenton, the Americans captured around 800 British soldiers, a victory that large for the American underdogs was incredible. However, for Hamilton, he wouldn't serve as an artillery captain the whole war. In fact, American military leaders offered Hamilton to be their aides in assist them in leading. Hamilton turned them down. Who he did not turn down was no one else but George Washington asking Hamilton to help him. Interestingly enough, Aaron Burr, who had been a part of the American incursion into Quebec, also tried to be the aide of Washington, but Hamilton got the position over him. Once he accepted, he was promoted to the rank of lieutenant colonel, where he drafted orders, passed letters, and wrote to Congress on behalf of Washington to ask for more guns and ammunition and men. He did this for 4 years, which helped Washington turn the tide against the British by being his right-hand man. In those conditions, Hamilton and Washington formed a friendship that would continue into both of their political careers until Washington died. Taking a break from the war, something special happened to Hamilton, because in 1780, while at a winter ball on leave, he met Angelica and Elizabeth Schuyler, the daughters of a wealthy American general. He quickly developed a strong relationship with the sisters, but fell in love with Eliza. Later that year, the two got married at the Schuyler Mansion. Back to the war, while under Washington, Hamilton had repeatedly asked him for a command of a unit, much like he had had with his artillery company. Each time, he had been turned down. This reached a climax when, after the Battle of Monmouth, General Lee showed his incompetence after he was promoted by Washington. During the battle, after Washington replaced Lee with Lafayette, Lee had taken to insults on Washington's name. Lawrence challenged Lee to a duel and won, but because of Hamilton's involvement in the duel, he was put on leave by Washington. Soon after, Washington recalled Hamilton and eventually gave him command of a light infantry battalion in July of 1781. There, he led his men heroically in the last battle of the war, which was the Siege of Yorktown, where a bayonet charge led by Hamilton pushed back the British defenders. And so, on October 19th, 1781, the remaining British forces led by Lord Cornwallis surrendered to George Washington at Yorktown. Hamilton, the bastard orphan from the Caribbean, had helped the ragtag volunteer army defeat a global superpower. But Hamilton isn't done working hard yet. In fact, at the end of the war, it was more like the end of the beginning for Hamilton's life. After the war, in October of 1782, Hamilton received his education in law and was certified to speak in cases before the Supreme Court of New York. It was also in this year that his firstborn son, Philip Hamilton, was born. He practiced law until he was chosen for the Constitutional Convention by Philip Schuyler in 1787, where he drafted edits to the Articles of Confederation. Some of those edits would end up on the Constitution. At the Constitution, he was the only delegate from New York to sign it. As such, Hamilton took to an intensive campaign in New York to get it ratified, which happened in 1788. However, the Constitution was still under attack, seen as a mess, in need of amendments, and just generally confusing. So, Hamilton, James Madison, who had become one of Hamilton's political enemies, and John Jay wrote the Federalist Papers. These essays defended the new United States Constitution within 25 essays that they planned to divide evenly. In the end, they wrote 85 essays. John Jay wrote 5, Madison wrote 25, and Hamilton wrote the other 51 essays, all in a span of 6 months. Then, in 1789, when Hamilton was just 33 years old, Washington appointed him to be the first Secretary of the Treasury. So at only 33, Hamilton had become literate and escaped the despair of the Caribbean, fought against the British in 2 heroic actions, led George Washington directly in commanding the American Continental Army, made edits to the Constitution, wrote 51 essays defending it in 6 months, and it was now the first Secretary of the Treasury. Truly incredible if you ask anyone. And this is only the first half of the life of Alexander Hamilton. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening today, and be sure to listen tomorrow as I will cover the second half of Alexander Hamilton's life then. And of course, I cannot end an episode without thanking my sponsors, who've largely financed the Forgotten History series. Big thank you to the Smithsonian Institute for helping me help people learn about how we became what we are today. In addition, shout out and thank you to the Alexander Hamilton Awareness Society for this incredible topic and additional funds to help this podcast talk about America's immigrant founding father. Also, be sure to check out the Alexander Hamilton Awareness Society website, as well as the Forgotten History one, where you can learn everything forgotten about history. Until next time.